Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. We've got Dean Lester on the show this week to continue the For and Against series. I'm going to run through both form analysis and his staking and money management. So let's have a chat with Dean. G'day, Dean. Thanks for joining us again on the podcast.
Yeah, pleasure, Dave.
It's an awesome time of the racing year. How's spring been for you so far?
Spring's been okay. Turnbull Stakes Day was a bit of a challenge for most. If you adjusted to the play of the day, you probably got it a bit more right. But it's shaping up well. I think Sydney's racing last Saturday was as good as it gets, and roads lead to Melbourne now over the next few weeks.
Exactly. So I wanted to speak to you in more general terms about how you go about it. We've had a series running on, and just to explain that people go about it in very different ways. I'll start off with data versus gut. Do you use a combination of both, or do you lean more one way?
Very much a combination of both. I like to sort of try and grab information from wherever I can. I'm a lot more into the breakdown of a race using actual figures than I probably was 5 years ago. I used to have notes about, high pressure race or low pressure race, but with the advent of the section of sectional times through someone like a Vince Cardi, that you get an actual figure that you can place on a race, and I'm using that a lot more. But I've still got probably the thing that got me into this industry is working. Before I was in the media, I worked hands-on with horses for 15, 20 years. So, I wouldn't want to let that go to waste, that sort of information.
So if you had to do without one or the other, what would it be? The ability to use your instinct and experience, or to go back to the days where you didn't have all that, the detailed sectional times?
I'd go back to looking at the animal. If I had to choose, I'd go back to what I know about horses and looking at them in the yard, because there's some days there that you go to the races and you're very confident about a selection and you get very deflated when you see them in the yard, whether they've sweated up or whether they haven't quite got to the peak that you'd expected, and you can be very disappointed, and very rarely do they let you down or run above expectations of what you see in the mounting yard.
So you have to cover a lot of races for the media work and the other work that you do, but from a betting perspective, do you get... do you have an interest in a lot of different races, or just really load up on a few?
Through the week, I'll be playing races that I think I can really zero down on and get right. And the Saturdays, the races where you're probably looking at better quality horses in general, I'm keen to play them. I think the thing that narrows my area of punting down is track conditions. The one thing I have refined in the last 10 years is betting less and less on wet tracks. It's too much guesswork because there's too big a difference between the way tracks are prepared and what constitutes a wet track. You'll see a horse with a W next to its name, and it might have won on a summer wet track, if you like, where there was rain, but underneath the ground was still very firm. Gets on a winter wet track, it's totally different, and they just don't perform. So the way I've probably narrowed down my punting over the last 5 to 10 years is certainly track condition.
And do you have a hard and fast rule about, whether it's a heavy 10 or heavy 9 when you pull the pin, or is it...
I'm quite happy if the track is at a rating that you expect when you're doing the form. If you're putting a lot of hours into it and you're expecting good, if there's any deterioration in the track by, say, a good 3 to a soft 5, I just don't know if, especially if you're on course, if you have the resources with you to accurately assess what's going to happen. So a hard and fast rule for me is if there's a track downgrade, I tend to shut up shop.
Okay. Just in general terms then, so not specifically on wet tracks, but in general terms, how heavily do you penalise back markers? Because I know that the speed maps play a pretty big role in what you do.
I do. Probably my biggest thing with horses is that they've got to have good strength, and often that, horses that steam home, you think they're strong, but they don't have that capacity to race on the pace. So I do penalise them more than I probably ever have, because I think races in general, I think the punters, we dissect them a lot more, but jockeys from probably 20, 25 years ago, you had fields that nine times out of 10, they were running at a really good speed. And I think over, you know, there was too much speed and you'd see horses from the back win a lot. Where now, I just think the way race shapes are put together is a lot more refined, and jockeys, whether it be over-analysis, tend to maybe go too steady in front or are too scared to make bold moves. And we see that the hardened seasoned riders like a Glenn Botts or a Jim Cassidy not afraid to make bold moves because they can back what they've done for 30 years. But I think the younger riders are a little bit apprehensive at making bold moves.
Vince spoke a couple of weeks ago about the myth that a fast pace, really fast pace, suits the backmarkers. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, certainly. There's a breaking point in a race where the race can break into two, and you'll just see, there's an example, if you go to a race, I think it was late August, the Charmed Harmony one at Caulfield, and when I've assessed that race, I've actually drawn a line at the 800 metre mark of those in the first group, those in the second group, and assessed the second group virtually running against each other, because in essence, there was no chance that the second group could actually get into the race. They were too far off the speed and they were already chasing. So you've got to have, if you're on a back market, you don't want that extreme speed. You've got to get that absolute right speed. And even, I mean, the ideal thing for a back market, which a lot of people wouldn't get, and I'm sure Vince probably touched on, is a slowing up mid-race where they just track into the race. They keep their momentum going and the leader has to pick up and go again.
Yeah, he did mention that. That's one of his favourites. You talked about jockeys before. How important are they when you're doing the form, and how much does that vary depending on the shape of the race?
Yeah, I'm not so much a person that penalises jockeys in the A-grade sense, whether they're in or out of form. I tend to look at the skill set of a jockey. I've got my own opinions on what some of the riders can and can't do, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and have the connections actually matched up the best rider for their horse. And sometimes you'll see an absolute high-profile rider and they might not be on the right horse because they don't have that. That might be the one little missing link in their skill set, whether they're not good on front runners or whether they're not good at settling a horse. And you'd be thinking, general public, you'd be thinking, well, this is a match made in heaven. They've got an in-form horse with an A-grade rider, but it mightn't be the right rider for the horse. And that's a subjective thing, but that's something that, you know, I think years of experience have taught me pretty well.
What about trainers? You've worked closely with a few at times in, you know, planning horses, preparation and the like. How much does that impact your either, I suppose, your rated price or whether you want to get involved and bet in a race, depending on whether it's a highly known trainer or a less skilled trainer?
Oh, yeah. Look, I think if the lesser light trainers, if they follow the path that is logical with a horse and they land in a metropolitan race or they land in the right race, as long as they've taken what you can see as a logical path to that race, I don't penalise that at all. I'm interested in trainers. Trainers are very much creatures of habit. If they've won a race doing a certain thing a certain way, they'll go back to trying to strike gold doing the same thing. So they're very much patterns in leading trainers in all different ways. They don't have the same patterns by any means, but they certainly have patterns. And the other thing is form within a stable. I do take notice of that because you can see that stables have runs. Now, whether that's because if they're in form, they've got three or four in-form horses and they can compare their other horses to those by working with them or what they're doing, and that lifts the level of the stable. Or conversely, if a stable's having a bad run, maybe their best horses are out of form and they've got absolutely nothing to compare with and they're just probably throwing the horses into races a little bit at will and not necessarily with the right thought process.
Are you a big believer in weights?
I was very much so when I started doing form assessments, but you know, we're talking 26 years ago now and handicapping wasn't as refined as it is now, and there were glitches in the system. One, there was a spread of weights a lot more than there is now. And two, handicapping, for instance, in Victoria, wasn't centralised. It was from district to district. So horses could get weighted, especially in the provincials, they could get weighted so differently if you went to the northeast or if you went to Gippsland. So there were glitches in the system then. But now it's centralised. Now horses have ratings. There's not many that, you know, sneak under the system. and it's more about seeing horses, you know, that have got that ability to advance through grades, because the handicapper can't really penalise them too much.
I know you look at trials and jump outs. How do you use that as part of doing the form, considering, you know, on the data side, you've got some to work with, but also you've got to rely on your own judgment as well?
Again, it's a little bit habitual with trainers. There's some trainers, you see them, trial them right up, and they know that they're ready to go. The one thing you don't know in watching a jump out as such is what weight the horses carry. You can sort of make an assumption if you see a rider that you know the style of, that they're a heavyweight, but the horse might have heavy shoes on. There's little bits of information the stable have still got that the punter can't ascertain just by watching the vision of jump outs, but it's been, it's been a good tool in the last 2 years that the Caulfield, Mornington and Flemington trials have come online, the jump outs that you can watch, and more so you can get a feel for a trainer if they're priming a horse for a big first up run, or they're just easing them back into their racing campaigns. And yeah, I like to use them. I like to have a visual of what a horse is doing, you know, leading up to a race. If it hasn't raced for 6 months, having a vision of its galloping action, etc., 2 weeks out from a race can only be a bonus.
Under what circumstances are you interested in a horse's breeding?
Oh, not much. Once they start producing information, data that you can assess them at, probably the only time I'd have an issue with breeding is if you know of a breed that are a bit temperamental, more temperament than what their capacity is to run a distance or whatever, because there's too many horses that defy genetics in that regard. So I'd be more interested in horses that I think might be a little bit frail mentally. There's breeds you can tap into and you can see that they just don't quite go to the next level, and that's the only time I take breeding into account.
You mentioned before about the better quality of horses. Do you get many betting opportunities for the smaller markets, you know, whether it's provincial country racing?
Oh, certainly, yeah. And that's more, you're not betting race to race, but you'll scan the field. There might be one that you know that you've assessed in a post-race situation that a race that you're anticipating will be a good form reference, whether it's because of a fast time or the way the race was run, and a horse might drop in grade, or it might be the first to come out of that race, and it's at the provincials, and so, you know, you back your judgment in that a race will be coming along that you think will be a good form race. You want to get ahead of the curve in that situation, back your judgment and start winning on them, and they might appear at the smaller venues. I'm certainly not Monday, Tuesday as forensic as you'd like to be later in the week, but with all the races on, you've got to just sort of draw the line a bit. But if a horse that, as I said, had come under the radar, popped up in a race, then you try and break that race down and see if you can get a dollar out of it.
So in terms of staking, do you have you or do you ever bet level stakes, or is it more proportionately?
Oh, I bet sort of mainly to a price that I might assess to and bet to win to my price to a figure, not to bet to the price, long as there's an advantage, I'll bet to my prices and say bet to win X amount of dollars off my prices, and that's when you get that bit of overlay, as you know. So, that would probably be my staking plan.
And does the staking amount vary depending on your confidence level of the race, like you know, whether there's enough exposed form, or you know, basically does your bet size vary, or is it always the same percentage of your bank according to that rated price that you
mentioned? I think the only time my bet would increase is if I'm reading a track right and I'm getting the play right in that regard. Not so much, I'm pretty standard with my bet sizes, but if I thought I was getting a track meeting right and there was, you know, it mightn't be evident for a couple of races and you might be ahead of the curve a little bit, I'd probably tend to have back my judgment at that I've got a track right more than anything.
And we've spoken to some people in the past that incorporate the market price in their staking plan. Do you use any kind of, you know, market intelligence, or it's pretty much just looking for those overlays that you mentioned?
Yeah, pretty much overlays. I think if you're betting race to race day to day and something just isn't right in a market, you've got to factor it in, whether it be if you're having a quaddie or if you're having a multiple bet form, or you've got one you like in the race and something with no form comes up $5 or $6 and you think, well, gee, maybe I've overlooked this, or I haven't got the intel that's made this $5 or $6, you'd probably best to, you know, whether you have a saving bet on that or incorporate it some way, and that's when I'd use market intelligence.
And would you normally back multiple horses in a race or go each way on runners that you like?
I'm flexible on that. I'm often, if I think I've got a race pretty right and I've got one at a reasonable quote, I might back it as the strongest. The two main dangers might back them to break even so that I don't lose on the race. Or conversely, if I'm strong on one, I'm happy to bet each way, but it's got to be at a fair advantage.
And do you have a preference or a sweet spot in terms of the prices that you're focused on, or is it really, you know, just wherever the value is, you're happy to play?
Yeah, pretty much. And again, it comes down to, you can do all the pricing you want, but you have a gut feel for things that sometimes, you know, there'll be a $3.50 favourite and you're sort of neutral on it, but then you'll see a $1.80 favourite that you think, well, if you're going on the amount of times it would win this race out of 10, it would win it more than that percentage, and it should be $1.50 or $1.40. I'm happy to take $1.80 if I'm getting that sort of over from the anticipated price that I thought it would be.
Do you ever bet, you know, during the week for Saturday's racing, or is it really just on race day?
No, I'll bet early if it looks as though the variables such as weather and an established track position, I'm quite happy to bet early and see how the market unfolds, because there's certainly, with the amount of options with corporate betting and the early fixed odds with the TABs, there's certainly good prices to be had if you think you've got the variables right, that there's not going to be a dramatic change closer to the race.
And do you do much pre-post or futures betting, you know, a couple of months out from the cups, for example?
I might take not the cups, because I just find it too hard to deal with the internationals. I'm interested in the Derby, the Oaks, the Guineas, those sort of races, because they are Australian and maybe some New Zealand input, but they're pretty much localised form lines. And if you think you might just spot a horse early, I'll have a small interest on a runner, and hopefully, as long as it's at big odds, that you're anticipating it might get to a race like the Derby, and that starts your market towards a race like that.
For exotics betting, do you do, you know, Quinellas, trifectas and the like? And also, you spoke about quaddies before. I know you provide one regularly, media-wise, and it's a massive betting pool. How do you attack, personally, the exotics?
Yeah, exotic-wise, I'm a quaddie player, because I'm sort of trying to assess a race, who's going to win. I think you've got to have a different imagination again with the multiples filling placings like trifectas, first fours, and you've got to know your limitations, and it's something that I have tried, and I don't think I've got the imagination as good as some players would have to get trifectas, first fours right. But of the exotics, I'll play quaddies, and I'll often play quinellas when I think there's only two or three chances. Try and narrow it down that way, but I've found trifectas. I've had a couple of good results, but it's not my strongest point.
So for your own betting bank, do you revise that or recalculate that on a regular basis?
I've got a record of every bet I have and what sort of bet form it is, and that's why I just mentioned about trifectas, that the column wasn't looking as rosy as it should have in comparison to the amount I've outlaid in other bet forms. So yes, I do, and I keep, as I said, a record of every bet, and I have a weekly tally of what's gone on in a week, and I keep that as a week-to-week basis, and just and that's what I started keeping that in 2004, and that's what led me to, I do it weekly, but then I do a monthly total, and what I did notice is that the winter months and the wet track months, they were just a no-go zone, so that's why that's been phased out of my betting sort of program a little bit.
And so with those results, are you focused on the bottom line, total profit, or is, you know, profit on turnover as a percentage a key metric for you?
Look, I've got a figure in my head that I like to try and win every year, knowing how much, you know, my spend has been a slight increase every year over a 10-year period, but I've got a figure within in my head that I want to win every year and try and achieve that. Obviously, you try and achieve more, but I've got a base figure that I try and win every year.
So not in dollar terms, but in percentage terms, the base figure that you try and win each year, what would be the worst year that you've had and the best? Is it, you know, like you've had a break-even year and a 200% year?
Yeah, exactly. I had 1 year in 2011 where I actually had a slight loss on the year, which was not the desired result, but probably outside influences there probably caused me to not be at my best. But, yeah, I've had, you know, nearly sort of 150, 175% years, and they're the golden years, but there seems to be about a 45 to 50% years most years.
Excellent. All right, really appreciate you coming on the show, Dean, and yeah, keep up the good work. Good luck for spring.
My pleasure, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.